This is an interview with former Judge J.R. Sowards by Edward McCurley for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. This interview was conducted in Judge Sowards' home in Greenup, Kentucky, on July 26, 1978.
You don't have the thing hooked up yet, do you?
Oh, yeah. We're in business.
Oh, that's the light cord.
That's
the light
cord. Uh-huh. Okay. What is your full name, Judge Sowards?
James Robb, R-O-B-B, Sowards, S-O-W-A-R-D-S.
And where were you born?
Born in Greenup, Kentucky.
Can you give me your birth date?
November 26, 1892.
Interested in the kinds of things that you have done throughout your life. Now, I know you were a judge here for a long time. What did you do prior to that?
Well, you mean you want my history?
If you'll tell
what
it,
I've done?
If you'll tell it to me.
Well, no. Well, I was in the engaged in the produce business with my father when I was a young man. And from there, I went into the Army in World War I. And when I returned from World War I, I worked at construction work on the dam number 30 in the river here below Greenup. And after that, I became a part of a company that had three Ford agencies. And after retiring from that, I studied law with a lawyer in Greenup, which was permitted at that time, and secured a license to practice law. And then I was engaged in law practice until I was elected judge. Oh, no. First, I was elected county attorney of Greenup County, and served one term. Then I returned to the practice of law and engaged in that until World War II. And the then county attorney of Greenup County was called to the service, so I acted for him during his absence. And after that was elected circuit judge and served as judge for 18 years. Retired, I believe, in 1964, and have been retired since and engaged largely in golf.
What caused you to go into law?
When I got out of the Ford agency, my idea was to engage in real estate. But I had found out that you had to know some law, so I subscribed for a commercial law course, correspondence course. And I became so interested in it that I wanted to go on and become a lawyer and take the bar examination, and did. Now, before I could take the bar examination, I had to serve 2 years with a local attorney in his office. That was a requirement before I was eligible to take the bar examination. I did that and passed the examination. Started practicing law.
They didn't require you to go to law school in those days?
Not at that time, no.
Who did you work with?
Thomas E. Nickel, the Commonwealth's attorney at that time.
You eventually became circuit judge here. How did you move from your law practice into onto the bench, I guess?
Well, I just closed my law office and took over in the courthouse.
What was behind that move? Why did you do that at that time?
I'm not going to get that on the record. Sorry.
No problem.
I shut that off, I'll tell you. You can take this on the record. It's a court of general jurisdiction. You have all types of cases from in the criminal line, from misdemeanors up to murders. mm-hmm. and no limit at all on civil jurisdiction. In other words, it's what the circuit court is what's known as a court of general jurisdiction. It all comes in there.
I see. Did you have any particularly unusual cases during your tenure that stick in your mind?
Well, I wouldn't say so. Some of them are rather startling to think about, but no, I wouldn't say there's anything unusual about it.
Okay. Let me take you back to the early days for a little while. What is the furthest back that you have any memory of any events or anything going on? What's the earliest memory that you have?
Well, I don't know. I guess I remember my great-grandmother Garland, and I remember my grandfather Sarge, and of course my grandfather on the Rob side lived for a number of years, and I remember him real well.
What was Greenup like when you were a child? Did it have paved streets?
It did not. All the streets were mud, and there were some places where they had a sort of a board thing laid across for people to walk on because of the mud. The only paving that was done was the street right here by our house. That's known as Elizabeth Street, and it was paved with huge cobblestones. And the reason for it being paved was that the old iron furnaces hauled their iron ore and their manufactured iron to the river grade down this street. And that street was paved. Mm-hmm. I still remember the old paving on it, if you call boulders paving.
When did they get around to paving the streets in this area?
Well, this street here was paved after we moved here. And that was probably 1925. I'd say the street was paved sometime in the 30s. The first paving that was done over on Main Street was not done under a contract of any kind. It was an agreement between the contractor who paved it and each property owner. Each person paid for the paving in front of their own property. And this paving that on our street was done under a bond issue.
Okay. I understand that there was an election here at one time where some ballot boxes were lost in the river. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. Not ballot boxes, one ballot box.
One ballot box. What year was that? Do you remember?
I can't tell you that. I don't know. It followed the election in which Judge Wheatley was elected county judge and was opposed by Jerome Shepherd. And there was a petition filed in the circuit court asking for a recount of the ballots. And in order for a ballot to be recounted by the circuit court, it's necessary to prove that they have not been monkeyed with or violated in any way. Integrity of the ballot must be established, is the legal term. And the ballots were stored in the ballot boxes, rather, with the ballots in them, were stored in a room over the pool room at Greenup. And a few days before the recount was to occur, it was discovered that the ballot box for Beachy Precinct was missing. Of course, there could be no establishment of integrity of the ballots with the ballot box completely missing. So the case was dismissed. And later, I hear that the ballot box was found in the river. That's all I know about it.
Nobody ever had any idea how it got there.
No one was ever prosecuted for it. There was an inquiry, of course, but no prosecution.
What was river life like in the early days? Were there a lot of boats stopping here?
There were not nearly as many boats as there are today, with the river turned into almost a canal. The river rose and fell, of course, with the rains, and in the summertime, often the river was so low that we could wade across it here. I've waded across the river here. And there were sandbars sticking out in the river at those low stages, and the boats had an awful time getting up and down during the low stages of the river. They stuck up on those sandbars, just one right after another.
Was a lot of material brought in to Greenup by a riverboat at that time?
In the old days, it was all, you might say, brought in. The C&O came in here before my time in the, I think it was in the early 1800s, about 1882 or 3, that the C&O opened up here. And before that, all of our commerce was river transport. Mm-hmm. We had no roads that they could transport things on. It had to be by river. But earlier than the building of the C&O was the E.K. Railroad, which is just east of Greenup, and went back through the hills to Willard and Webbville, Kentucky. And they hauled coal and iron from the furnaces and that type of transportation. And they were, the E.K. was built, I don't know how many years before the C&O, but quite a few years before the C&O came through here.
How did people get around?
Well, I can only tell you my own experiences. It was largely horses and buggies until the automobile came into being. And the only traveling that I did or remember doing was my mother, I think, took me to Portsmouth on the train in the morning and bought me a winter and a summer outfit and brought me back on that the C&O train in the late afternoon, the evening. And that's about the only time I got out of Greenup. I didn't travel much. We were a self-contained community, and we got along fine doing it, too.
You had everything to meet your needs right down?
Huh?
You had everything here to meet your needs in downtown Greenup?
Oh, yes. My father was a country doctor, and he didn't have much money, but we had all the conveniences and necessities. We had no water now, and we had no gas. My grandfather built the first electric plant that was ever operated here, and we started out with grates like that one you see right there, and the houses we lived in had grates in practically every room, and it was my job to see that there was coal and kindling for those things all the time too, and it was more of a job than you might think in a big house.
How big a family did you grow up in?
I was an only son.
Only son.
Only child.
Did you ever accompany your father? Did he make rounds?
Oh, yes. We had a stable, and he had a riding horse, saddle horse he called it. Then he had a buckboard and a team, two horses that pulled that. And I can remember that he'd probably leave like this morning, go make a round through the country, and maybe not be back for 2 days.
I guess he tended to all kinds of illnesses.
Oh, yes. Now, their training ability was strictly limited as compared to the doctors of today. But they certainly answered a need. And they, believe it or not, They didn't ask if you had the money to pay for their services. When somebody needed attention, they went. And I wish I had my father's books to show you. I think that he didn't get paid more than a third of the time.
How was he paid?
He was paid in cash if they had cash, in produce or whatever they had. They'd give him and he'd take it, and if they didn't give him anything, that was all right too.
What kind of training in medicine did your father have?
He graduated from the University of Cincinnati. Training he had, as I told you, the training he had wouldn't compare with the training of a doctor today. And their facilities were crude. For instance, there was a hospital that almost from the time I can remember at Ironton operated by Dr. Marty. And it was a task to get a patient to that hospital. You had to very poor road conditions, and that's the only way you could get there, was hauling there. Now you imagine hauling a very sick person 8 or 10 miles over those rough roads. So they did most of what they did right here. Hospitals were not used a great deal at that time.
Did he perform surgery?
After a fashion, but he was not a surgeon. Anything that he had to do, he did, or tried to do. No, he was not a surgeon. And if you mean abdominal operations like that, no, he did not do that.
Was there a Patton Hotel downtown at one time?
Yes, there was. It's still there, but it's not a hotel now. It's
what
a
is
rooming
it?
House.
Rooming house. Where is it exactly?
It's on Harrison Street. And it's the second building from the river on Harrison Street.
Who operated that hotel?
At the time, they called it the Patton Hotel. It was operated by Leander Patton and his wife. Before that, it was one time the saloon of Jacob Urban.
Saloons. They had liquor here?
They had saloons facing the courthouse on all streets. One was operated by Jacob Urban, one was operated by a Mr. Huffman, and one was operated by McAllister, and one at one time by Nicholas Bergmeyer.
What happened to those saloons?
The county voted dry. It's been a dry county almost ever since that time.
When was that? Do you know?
You have to figure it out for yourself. I was a lad, old enough that we were buying a little beer, having it delivered to the livery stable, and my father found out about it and took me around to each saloon and introduced me and told him to sell me whatever I had the money to pay for, that he didn't want me up in those damn dark alleys.
Well, what was the reason for the county going dry, do you know?
Oh, I don't know that I can answer. I don't know that I can give you any reason other than that the majority of the people were against liquor in any form.
Mm-hmm. Has that led to bootlegging?
Ever since the county voted dry, we've had bootlegging. And in my opinion, you always will have. there are enough people here who want a drink, including me, that they're always going to get it. And I couldn't testify about this in the court. I don't know it of my own knowledge, but right now there must be 8 or 10 bootleggers scattered around here.
I was talking to a man down in Carter County the other day who lived ways back in the hills, and he was telling me about the days when they had moonshiners down in those hills.
He had them here, plenty of them.
When did the last one disappear? Or maybe they're still in existence.
Well, what makes you think they have disappeared?
The man told me in Carter County they had.
I don't think they've all disappeared in Greenwood County.
Is that right?
No, I don't think so.
It probably is not as extensive as it once was.
No, it's largely in small operations where they're just making for themselves and a few of their cronies or neighbors because of the high price of legalized liquor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any commercial operation moonshining in the county anymore.
Kind of an impact did the Depression have on this area? Did it knock a lot of people out of work?
I should say it did. I remember very well, I was acting as county attorney at the time. I remember very well the day the bank closed here. We had just at that time one bank, the First National, and it closed. And my wife and I took an inventory, and we had $14 and some change. And we didn't know where the next dollar was coming from for how long. And of course, that situation righted itself rather soon. But for us, I mean, for a lot of people, it didn't right itself for months and months. And we had people who were actually hungry. Not just a few, we had a great many people here who were hungry during the first part of that Depression. I think that the whole country could take a lesson from that Depression. The people who really wanted to work, a lot of them couldn't get work. And they were just grateful to have any kind of work at all that would bring in a dollar. But the community as a whole pretty much banded together and saw that no one starved to death. It was quite different from this present welfare situation, but the community operated as a community to try to relieve that distress.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that now.
Did you work as the county attorney all through the Depression?
Yeah, well, no, the Depression, in my opinion, the Depression lasted until the beginning of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't work there that long. I only worked there about I'd say 2.5 years while the present circuit judge was then county attorney, and I relieved him while he went to the Army about 2.5 years.